Well, the last time I spoke, I covered a subject that hasn't been dwelt on all that much in the past. I can't recall anyone speaking directly and as thoroughly as I did on that topic, which was what we call the Second Resurrection Era. We considered what it would be like, or what it will be like, for those people who come up in the Second Resurrection. Today I would like to cover the other end of that period of time and to consider what it's going to be like for those people who experience the second death, because that is the culmination of this whole experience with humanity that is a part of God's plan. He is going to cleanse society and present to himself a pure culture, a pure population to which he can become enjoined. This event, we could call, is the finalization of the world's greatest mystery. Most people have no clue where we came from or where we're going. There are ideas. Religion have come up with their own ideas. All kinds of different ideas. But they really have no clue about God's ultimate plan for his creation. All of history is going to come down to a point in time, which is generally understandable, but people don't understand it specifically, but we're going to come to a thing called the final sentencing. People don't know when that is necessarily. The average person thinks you die and you are consigned to either place at the time of your death. But that's not the biblical story. All of the biblical accounts show this final sentencing event to be a group affair. It's not individual now and then. It's all together. And how can that be? When we resolve this particular question, it becomes the key to understand the matter of just and final judgment. God's judgment is just, and it happens to be final because there is that situation that we call, and the Bible calls, the second death. And that death is different from anything that we would normally conceive of. So when we understand this event properly, we have the answers to many important questions. Now in Matthew 12, Jesus speaks of Nineveh and Sodom coming up together. That applies to the previous resurrection, not particularly to the one that is going to come at the end of the second resurrection era. Those who come up in the third resurrection, and some people have problems with that term, I understand. If you want to call it part two of the second resurrection, that's entirely possible. Those two resurrections are separated by a generation. But it's that last resurrection, the resurrection to sentencing, that is our consideration today. What happens then? Why is it then? Who is there? Why are they there? This concludes God's plan for physical humanity. There are people who will awaken with no awareness of the passage of time. To them, it's all the same. They will have died. They will have lost consciousness. They will have spent time in their graves, unaware of the passage of time. But they're all going to arise together. And in that, they're all equal in a sense. Their day of awakening will appear to them to be just moments after their final memory. Now, the world's idea is that people would wake up standing before the judgment seat for sentencing. Think of how the world conceives of this, particularly the religious world. They're going to die, and then they're going to appear before St. Peter at the gates, I suppose you could say, and be allowed in or not. That's the concept that exists, at least in the common religious world that we're aware of. That's not how it is. That's not particularly biblical. But it's what a lot of people think. And that's what they're going to think when they come up. They're going to think that that's sort of what is happening to them. But actually, it's not. Now, people have gotten that idea from the religions of our time. But those who lived through the millennial experience wouldn't think that. Revelation 14:13 talks about them. And it's perhaps a verse that we should look at because it kind of explains the situation. Revelation 14:13. And this is speaking to those people who live during the millennial age. And I heard a voice from heaven saying unto me, write, blessed are the dead which die in the Lord from henceforth. Yea, says the Spirit, that they may rest from their labors and their works do follow them. Now that verse is important to understand part of this contingent that's going to come up in what we call the third resurrection. Those people who were raised in the second resurrection would know the truth about this coming event, the second event. There won't be any false religion in their time that would affect their thinking or their ideas. The second resurrection era, it's a span of time that is one generation long, and that was discussed in the previous message. But it's not the sentencing per se. That's important to understand. People tend to think of it as the judgment throne. Well, it's judgment, yes, but it's a different kind of judgment. It's the evaluative phase of judgment when people are given the opportunity that they never had. There are people who are going to be called up by a resurrection that does not involve everyone. And in John chapter 5, we can see where Jesus Christ himself spoke of this. There's two places, at least, that give the three resurrections all in order. And this is one of the nice ones here that is very clear. John chapter 5, about verse 24. And let's look at these, because it's very revealing. And I'm not saying this is something that was generally understood this early in the point in time. But when you compare it with what the same information that's covered in Revelation chapter 20, you can begin to see that there are three distinct situations that he presents here. Verily, verily, I say unto you, he that hears my words and believes on him that sent me has everlasting life and shall not come into condemnation. Keep that in mind because that's going to be important later. But is passed from death into life. Now the comparable passage in Revelation 20 explains that these people who are in that particular category are exempt from the second death. It does not apply to them. And that's the subject here today, the second death experience. And then he punctuates what he's saying with, "Verily, verily, I say unto you, the hour is coming, and now is, when the dead shall hear the voice of the Son of God, and they that hear shall live." They that hear. The implication being that not all will hear. Now this we understand to be the second resurrection. Verse 28, he punctuates again, and this is what he realizes is going to just blow people out of the water. He says, "Marvel not at this, for the hour is coming in the which all that are in their graves shall hear his voice." So we have two different situations. We have one situation where people will hear, but only those who hear will arise. Then we have another situation where all will arise, none excepted. Now we have to think about this. Where does that apply? Where it says all will arise, at what point in time is that? Well, that is at the end of the Great White Throne era, that period of time in which those who never had opportunity, that's why they heard and that's why they were called to rise, they never had opportunity. They'll be given the opportunity, but that opportunity period does not last forever. It comes to an end, and we know that. And the end of it is going to be the final sentencing event. So the Great White Throne is a generation-long age of opportunity. But that's not the final sentencing. That's merely the final judgment period when people's response to God's opportunity for salvation is accepted or spurned. When we get to Revelation chapter 14, there is where we see the final sentencing event. Revelation 14, beginning in verse 14. We just read verse 13, which talks about those who die in the Lord from that point in time onward. Verse 14, we are now at the end of the Great White Throne period of time. And we come to another situation that we perhaps ought to understand better than we do. It's called the White Cloud Harvest. Now, Revelation chapter 14 is sort of a compilation of, or it's an overview of all of the harvests of humanity that are going to take place. When we get down to verse 14, we are at the final harvest. "And I looked, and behold, a white cloud, and upon the cloud one sat like unto the Son of Man, having on his head a golden crown, and in his hand a sharp sickle." What is a sickle used for? It's a harvest instrument. That's what we're talking about. This is a harvest. What kind of harvest? The harvest of humanity. "And another angel came out of the temple, crying with a loud voice to him that sat on the cloud, thrust in your sickle and reap, for the time is come for you to reap. For the harvest of the earth is ripe." Now, what does that tell us? That tells us that at this point in time, there is no reasonable prospect of anyone else becoming converted. That period of opportunity has come to an end. Anyone who raises crops realizes when the end of the harvest season comes, or when the end of the growing season comes, and it's ready for the harvest, Waiting another month or two is not going to create more produce. It doesn't happen that way. There's a point in time when the growing season has come to its end. And that's what's happening here. Verse 16, and he that sat on the cloud thrust in his sickle on the earth, and the earth was reaped. So this is the point in time when the Son of Man harvests his produce, humanity, for himself, for his family. But there's a contingent that is left behind. We read of that now in verse 17. Another angel came out of the temple which is in heaven, and he also having a sharp sickle. And another angel came out from the altar which had power over fire, and cried with a loud cry to him that had the sharp sickle, saying, thrust in your sharp sickle, and gather the clusters of the vine of the earth, for her grapes are fully ripe. Now these are the grapes of wrath. These are the people that are consigned to God's wrath. And he's saying that particular cluster of humanity is as far along as they could possibly go. You couldn't expect any more conversions out of that group of people. And the angel thrust in his sickle unto the earth, and gathered the vine of the earth, and cast it into the great winepress of the wrath of God. That is the second death experience. Over in Revelation 20, we read more about that. Verse 4. Revelation 20, verse 4. And I saw thrones, and they sat upon them. And judgment was given unto them. And I saw the souls of men that were beheaded for the witness of Jesus and for the word of God, that which is not worshipped the beast, neither his image, neither had received his mark upon their foreheads or in their hands. And they lived and reigned with Christ for 1,000 years. But the rest of the dead lived not again until the 1,000 years were finished. This is the first resurrection, speaking of those who come up at Christ's second coming. But there's another resurrection after that. Drop down to verse 11. And I saw a great white throne, and him that sat on it, from whose face the earth and heaven fled away, and there was found no place for them. We covered that in the last message. And I saw the dead, small and great, stand before God, and the books were opened, and another book was opened, which is the book of life. And the dead were judged out of those things which are written in the books, according to their works. So they're given opportunity to demonstrate their works. So that's an opportunity period. And then in verse 13, that's a different period of time. This is when all who are in their graves will rise. And the sea gave up the dead which are in it, and death and hell delivered up the dead which are in them, and they were judged every man according to their works, and death and hell were cast into the lake of fire. This is the second death. And whosoever was not found written in the book of life was cast into the lake of fire. The second death is accomplished by the lake of fire. Now these people that come up in that final resurrection are still going to come up physical. Those who came up in the second resurrection are physical. They're restored back to a physical life to pursue the opportunity that they were never given. But what about all the rest when they hear? Who will be in this ultimate, this final resurrection? Those who didn't hear in the second, they'll come up with it. Those who lived and died during the millennial age will come up in this final resurrection. They lived and they died as people do now. This is the millennial age I'm talking about. People lived and died. People in the millennium will have the opportunity to become converted. No deception. No satanic influences. Perfect opportunity. No excuse. But there will be people who live and die. Some converted, unfortunately. Some not. But then, another contingent of people will come up in this final resurrection. And that's those who lived in this age prior to Christ's second coming, who spurned the opportunity for salvation. There is no second chance. They will have had their chance. They will sleep through this entire period of time and stand in the end at the white cloud event. That's the important thing to consider. This is when all of humanity who has ever lived will stand for final sentencing. It's going to be a vast number, that's for certain. But there now, as the angel says, the harvest is fully ripened, it's time. Humanity now, at this point in time, is ready for final sentencing. When will it be? Well, it's going to be a few years after the end of the millennial age. One generation, however long that is. Something else to think about. There won't be any young children in the final resurrection. Any young children, infants or whoever, who never had the opportunity for salvation will come up in the second. They will have the time to live out a normal life. Will any of them die during this Great White Throne era? This is a question that was never adequately addressed in WCG. Back in about, somewhere in 2005 era, I submitted a paper to the Doctrinal Committee of UCG, and I basically presented to them what we had been taught for decades. And the idea was that those people who come up in the second resurrection would live out their lives and die again. And they would have to be raised again for final sentencing. The head of the Doctrinal Committee at the time, Leon Walker, kind of balked at that. He realized the problem. And so I made a resubmission, changing it to a different take, which I find logical, that those who come up in the second resurrection will remain alive and be joined by those who come up for final sentencing. That made more sense. Unfortunately, the Doctrinal Committee didn't get a chance to review the booklet again because that's when the Kagwa situation developed. But to me, it makes sense that those who come up for final sentencing will include all of humanity. Those people who came up in the second will live on, complete their lives, and be joined by those who come up in what we call the third. So all of humanity is standing before the white cloud harvest. Christ is going to take for himself those who have been converted. It's what is called the sheep from the goats harvest. And we can read of that in Matthew chapter 25, where he was very explicit. I'm sure you know the story. There is a point in time when the sheep and the goats are going to be raised together, intermingled. And he has to separate the sheep on the one hand from the goats on the other. And to the sheep, he gives them a positive reception. To the goats, he does not. But think about that. Where do the sheep come from? When Christ raises the elect at his second coming, would he not have harvested all the sheep that there were at that point in time? So now for there to be more sheep, where did they come from? The answer should be obvious. Those converted after Christ's return. The millennial age. I would say the vast majority are going to become converted during the millennial age. But they're going to live and die, as people do now, a normal lifespan, go to their graves and await the sentencing to final judgment. Those who are raised in the second resurrection are going to have the opportunity that they never had. There will be conversions among them. I would expect the greater majority. So that's where the sheep come from. And the goats are who? Well, the goats would be those who lived and died in our generation, who rejected their opportunity, presuming they had a legitimate opportunity. They're going to be there. Those who live in the millennium who just never followed through and floated along, took the easy route and were never converted, really, they're going to be there. Same thing of those people who were given their opportunity during the second resurrection era. There's going to be sheep and goats produced in these periods of time. Those are the ones who are going to stand before the Son of Man sitting on the white cloud. And he'll know who to harvest for himself and who to leave to the two angels to deal with after he exits the scene. And that's what Revelation 14 pictures for us. So what is the great white throne? We've talked about that. It isn't seen as that by the typical religious viewpoint. They think that's the time when final sentencing is imposed. We see it differently. We see it as being the period of time of opportunity, where people can exhibit their works, which he says will follow them. Till when? It's going to follow them until the end, when sentencing takes place. There is a first death, and there is a second death. The second death is imposed only at the final sentencing event. These who come up in the second resurrection and those who come up in the third stand together in the final white cloud sentencing event. That's when the sheep from the goats situation occurs. Keep in mind, God has a record of everyone's conduct. There is a thing called the spirit in man. That spirit has recorded our attitudes, our deeds, our actions, our repentances. He has that record, and it's clear. He'll know who is his and who is not. That spirit is going to be put back into those people that are resurrected. Resurrected physical at first. They stand before the white cloud harvest. They're brought into the family of God, those that are harvested by the Son of Man, and the rest are dealt with. They will face the second death. Then what? And here's the best part. You see, when the second death is accomplished, death will have been defeated. Keep in mind, Christ's mandate was to rule until he had conquered death. At which point in time, He has accomplished his mandate. And you can read of that in Psalm 110, verse 1, for example. And I might mention Psalm 110, verse 1 is the most often repeated passage of Scripture in the New Testament. It's referenced and repeated verbatim or by inference 19 times. He is to rule until he has conquered every enemy. The last enemy to be conquered is death. Well, when that's accomplished, then what? This is the best part. And that's found in 1 Corinthians 15. Verse 24. Then cometh the end, when he shall have delivered up the kingdom to God, even the Father, when he shall have put down all rule and all authority and power. For he must reign till he hath put all enemies under his feet. That was his mandate from Psalm 110. The last enemy that shall be destroyed is death. When the white cloud harvest is accomplished, when the final sentencing is accomplished, there will be no physical beings alive capable of death. We read that part where death and hell are going to be cast into the lake of fire. They're going to be exterminated as things that could even happen. So now we have a totally pure society. For he hath put all things under his feet, referring to Psalm 110. But when he says all things are put under his feet, it is obvious that he is exempted, which did put all things under him. And when all things shall be subdued unto him, then shall the Son also himself be subject unto him that put all things under him, that God may be all in all. Jesus Christ is going to turn his family of spirit-born beings, those that he called in this age, who were raised in the first resurrection, those who were called in the millennial age and the post-millennial age, who become converted, who are made spirit beings in a later time frame, those who are the children of Christ and his bride, that family will be turned over to the Father and be enjoined by him, where he becomes what is called all in all. Do we even begin to understand the implications of that statement? And that's the point in time when the New Jerusalem from above will descend with the Father, presenting it as to basically his bride, which will be the entire family. There is a New Jerusalem that comes later. There's one that's built during the millennium, but there's another that comes later. And that's the point in time when the Father descends to bring the family to himself after the final sentencing is accomplished. We have been given so many important facts in the Word. So many answers. The world doesn't have those answers. And I'm sure we're still working on a lot of it ourselves. But God's plan is complete. It's laid out before us. It's comprehensive. And it's eminently logical. Reading from Revelation chapter 22, starting in verse 8. And he said unto me, these sayings are faithful and true. And the Lord God of the holy prophets sent his angel to show unto his servants the things which must shortly be done. Behold, I come quickly. Blessed is he that keeps the sayings of the prophecy of this book. And I, John, saw these things and heard them. And when I heard them and seen, I fell down to worship before the feet of the angel which showed me these things. Then he said unto me, see, you do it not, for I am your fellow servant, and of your brethren, the prophets, and of them which keep the sayings of this book, worship God. And he says unto me, seal not the sayings of this prophecy of this book, for the time is at hand. He that is unjust, let him be unjust still. And he that is filthy, let him be filthy still. And he that is righteous, let him be righteous still. And he that is holy, let him be holy still. And behold, I come quickly, and my reward is with me, to give every man according as his work shall be. I am Alpha and Omega, the beginning and the end, the first and the last. Blessed are they that do his commandments, that they may have right to the tree of life, and may enter in through the gates into the city.